This is Steve Tucker from Morbid Angel, and you're listening to Toilet of Hell.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
It's time for your weekly Toilet of Hell radio. I'm Joe Thrashenkill. With me, I've got 365 days of horror and Brenicide. And we actually have a hell of a show for you today because we've got a very special guest coming with to join the show in just a few minutes. That would be Steve Tucker of the mighty Morbid Angel. We got to talk for about a half hour about all kinds of cool shit, and I'm stoked for you guys to hear it. But in the meantime, Breno, Jordan, how you doing?
You got to deal with us first. you gotta let us talk about some things first. You got to wait before you get all the good juicy stuff with Steve Tucker. But we'll do our best. We'll entertain you nonetheless, just like we do every week. That's what we do. I'm doing okay. Nothing too exciting on the home front here. Just looking very much forward to my short work week with the upcoming Turkey Day festivities.
Oh, hell yeah. Me too, man. Gonna really focus my energies on going outside and grilling while my lady's family is here.
Yeah. My wife's family, they seem to be turning more over a vegan leaf lately. So there's probably some things that I should be looking forward to that I'm not so much. But her father is still just like a curmudgeonly meat lover like myself. So we're going to have a turkey and stuffing, but we're probably going to have an array of dishes I'm going to have to get used to as well.
Tofurkey for Thanksgiving. How about you, Jordan? What's up?
Oh, so I've actually been slightly busy. I am an uncle now for the first time ever.
Hey, mazel tov.
Yeah, congratulations, man.
Thank you. It's a little weird. You know, it's kind of my sister lives a few hours away from me. So we had to travel down to see her. And, you know, obviously with birth, it's not, okay, it's going to happen exactly at 5 o'clock.
No.
It's the big rush and then wait. So rush down there, wait. Ended up going back to her place and sleeping for a couple hours and then, like, rushing back in the morning. But mother's happy and healthy. Nephew is happy and healthy. So that's all exciting. And now my schedule is all completely screwed up because I missed, like, 3 days of work. And, you know, you just kind of get into a groove of things. And now it's just like, what do I do now?
Yeah, man, it's like you said, it is a little weird at first, but they get a little bit cuter if you give them more time.
Yeah, I got to wait for him to like be able to talk and, you know, take him ice skating and stuff like that. But for now, it's like, oh, cool. New life in the world. Neat.
Yeah.
Good luck.
After spending $4,000, my dog is finally back home in a cone and grumpy as hell.
Good. Good. We're all glad. We were all at the edge of our seat hoping that Franklin would pull through.
Yeah. Oh, last night I got to go see Parliament Funkadelic with George Clinton. And man, that was something else. His guitar player, like, shreds so much harder than, like, any metal dude I've ever seen. I believe it was Dwayne McKnight. He had, like, this super high-gain amp that was just, like, total metal tone the entire way and was just shredding for 2 hours the entire. It was sick. Very, very sick.
Yeah, it wasn't until I started getting into guitar that I realized that there are genres that I just cannot touch outside of metal and that heavy metal isn't really, like, the virtuoso's realm it makes itself out to be sometimes.
I mean, yeah, definitely sometimes, but it's an entirely another thing to improvise for 2 hours.
Right.
So that was sick. But I figured we'd do something a little bit different with this episode since we've got Steve Tucker coming on. I'm a big Morbid Angel fan, and I thought it'd be cool if we kind of talked a bit about Morbid Angel before we get into the interview, because you guys aren't totally familiar, or at least you're not big mega fans. Is that correct?
Yeah, Morbid Angel is one of those bands that I feel has been around for so long and they've put out so much music that I don't know where to begin, so I've just never really bothered.
Yeah, they have been around for forever. It was started, the only consistent member the entire way is Trey Asgdoth. who started the band in 1983, and he is just a really interesting dude. And that I would say he's probably the heavy metal equivalent of Eddie Van Halen, and the way that like his weird imagination with his instrument has kind of reshaped metal itself. Because he's known for these weird angular riffs that weren't really around before that. And, you know, everybody from, like, I don't know, Gojira to Blood Incantation has taken, like, a huge amount of influence from his guitar playing in the years since. So, very, very interesting thing. And it's worth noting that I would love to have him on the show one day, just because he's known for being a really kind of fun, happy-go-lucky dude, like contrary to all of the imagery of the band, like extreme music for extreme people and all that stuff. And he loves anime. He's a big weeaboo.
Yeah, same. That sort of that dipping groove kind of riff, that's it's very Morbid Angel. I do know enough about the band to kind of recognize that. And yeah, I do hear that a lot in things like Gojira, certainly. A lot more influential. I mean, they do get their credit, but maybe not as much as I guess some people would like to see.
Yeah. And they've been, you know, I don't think that there's ever been a hiatus for the band either. Trey has had like a million different dudes in the band from time to time, like starting off with like Mike Browning and moving on to like Eric Rutan, who's, you know, everybody knows them. He's the guy that produces death metal records. He was in the band for a bit, as well as Pete Sandoval was a drummer in the band who later went on to grindcore band Terrorizer. And they kind of, like, Pete kind of reshaped the sound of the band, and it would really influence a lot of metal later, because he started using triggers on his drum to get that really even double bass sound all the way through, because, I mean, the dude is just running a mile for every song. So, you know, for better or worse, the sound that's kind of, like, everywhere in metal, that's Pete.
Where should someone who doesn't really know a lot about Morbid Angel start? Because I've heard, like, you should start with Altars of Madness. Some people say Covenant. What do you think is, like, the Morbid Angel album for a newcomer?
Man, it's really tough to say, because people are super we talk about this a bit in the interview with Steve Tucker, but people have their record, and they fight tooth and nail over it. My favorite record is Domination, which is probably not a super popular pick among Morbid Angel diehards. It was the first one that I heard by them, and it's definitely a lot more accessible in sound. Like, the biggest song from that is probably Where the Slime Live, which I would assume that a lot of folks have heard, and I think that's a great introduction for that record. But other people say Altars of Madness is the way to go, because you got to hear how the band started out. Others are say Covenant. And then moving onwards, so it's worth noting that Morbid Angel, they title their records in alphabetical order, starting with Altars of Madness, going to Blessed Are the Sick, Covenant, Domination.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, and then after Domination, Evil D, or David Vincent, however you want to call him, I call him the Nipple Tape God. He left the band and was replaced by Steve Tucker in 1998 to do Formulas Fatal to the Flesh, followed by Gateways to Annihilation, and then Heretic, and then Evil D came back for a little record called Illid Divinum Insanus. Now stop me if you guys have heard this one before. That was probably known as one of the biggest flops in the history of metal ever. It's tough to think of something that's maybe cold, definitely the band's Cold Lake. It explored like a really synth heavy industrial sound, and I'll be honest with you, man, it's pretty unlistenable for me anyway. After that, they kicked out Vincent and brought back in Steve Tucker for their latest record, which is Kingdom's Disdain, and that's going to come out in a couple of weeks now. So I'd say the entire way through, Trey's guitar playing gets more and more just kind of wild out there, further and further. Altars of Madness could be kind of considered a more traditional death metal record, whereas you get all the way to Formula's Fatal to the Flesh, and he is doing shit that, like, nobody had even thought about. So it's interesting stuff. I love Formula's as well as Domination. I think those are probably my two favorite. And we'll play some stuff from those records on the show today.
I remember I owned Altars of Madness. It was like the only Morbid Angel CD that I owned back when I used to own things like CDs. And it's very I'd almost call it kind of Slayer-ish as far as its guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of blast beats throughout, like blast beats up the wazoo just all throughout the thing. And it's kind of a punishing record if it's not something you're in the mood for, especially compared to some of their kind of later groovier stuff. My very first experience with the band was back when I was a young kid. I was a big Beavis and Butthead fan, and they just roast that one music video for God of Emptiness.
Yes.
The whole "bow to me faithfully." They just had a lot of fun with that one. But I remember hearing that, and more than I laughed, I thought the song was just fucking awesome. So I kind of went looking, and I saw that Altars of Madness was definitely where I should start. And I don't want to say I was disappointed by how different the sound was, but I guess I was surprised that it was quite a deviation from how they kind of moved towards more of that sort of sludgier, kind of groovier sound. Yeah, so Covenant, it might be a good starting point depending on how, like, what you've heard from the band. And
yeah, you know, it's funny. Kind of sound you like. The two records that I've never heard anybody say are their favorite, well, I guess Blessed Are the Sick, it's just, it's a good record, but it's not nearly on the same level of, say, Covenant. And Heretic, the 2003, the last one they did with Steve Tucker until recently, the production on that one is just kind of stale. It doesn't really pop in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you meet anybody that says Illa Divinum Insanus is their favorite Morbid Angel record, you need to call the police, look for an adult, and run.
They're just trolling you.
Yeah.
Wasn't it, who's the guy from, or not Gorgoroth? Oh my God, Behemoth, the Nurgle, right? The guy with the khaki shorts and whatnot. Yeah. when that album was kind of being hyped, he said, "Oh, I love this fucking record. It's going to cause World War III," which I didn't really think was much of a compliment.
Yeah. Also, like, I super don't get Behemoth in any way. So.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. Have you guys ever been a fan of that band?
I really just don't like the vocals. I think the music is okay. But just his, like, his weird guttural, like, I just fucking, I can't stand it.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Good. So it's worth noting that when we're going through the discography and the ABCD thing, we missed a couple of letters. Between Domination and Formula's Fatal to the Flesh, there is a live record called Entangled in Chaos. In between Illa Divinum Insanus and Kingdoms Disdained, there is a one-off live record from the recorded during the Altars of Madness days called Juvenalia. Now, this is funny because it was a one-off record store day release, limited to about 1,500 copies from Earache. And I guess the band decided to just go along with it, even though they were surely being screwed out of money by Earache, is a common thing that we hear. And what? Sing. K is an easier name to work with.
Yeah. That doesn't sound like the Earache we know.
Yeah. Digby, Blackberry Smoke, like, those are people you can trust. So, we are now, like, with this new record, and I've only heard one song from it, but it sounds really like a return to, like, where the band should be after they put out, like, Gateways to Annihilation. I don't have the whole thing because we gave it to Daniel to review the record, that fucking bastard. So I'm hoping that it's good. I don't know.
I heard the one single from it.
Mm-hmm. Piles of Little Arms.
Piles of Little Arms. Yeah, that was it. It's cool stuff. Yeah, it's a bit more of a return to form, although it's I mean, I guess I got to hear more of the album, but it's kind of that thing where it seems like bands who have been doing something different for so long, when they try to do a return to form, it just, I don't know, it seems a little half-assed. Not to, I mean, it's still a good song. It's weird. I don't know how to explain it. It's just, I was kind of trying to listen to some older stuff to sort of catch up with this episode. And then I jumped right to that to kind of see why everyone was hyping it so much. And maybe that's where I fell short.
I think a big part of this hype is that, you know, you're seeing dudes that have loved this legendary band for a long time, and they haven't really got anything, I guess, that's scratched that itch in about 16 years. So there was a lot of hype for Illid because Evil D was making a return, and then just that was a boner killer for yeah. everybody.
Yeah, it's kind of like when a sports team is bad for like 15 years and then they like just make it into the playoffs and everyone's like super excited and like, yeah, we're finally doing it. It's kind of like the same thing. With
exactly.
This new song.
Yeah. So that's like every season, every Cowboys fan is like, this year, this is the Super Bowl.
Yeah. How many return to form albums have Metallica put out? 6, 7 maybe at this point?
I think everyone. Same with Slayer.
Yeah. This is it. This is the one we've been waiting for. What is it like? No More Heroes by Megadeth.
Well, specifically with Dave Mustaine, he has said that literally every record is a return to form. Like, I remember reading Guitar Mags like in the 90s where he was like, yeah, I mean, we really miss a step. Like, I don't think our guitar playing was good enough, but this new record, and it's just the same thing every 2 years ad infinitum.
This is it.
I don't know what he had. Yeah, I don't know what he had before, but he's going to capture it on this one. So yeah, there's a lot of hype on this, and you know, I'm stoked to hear it. It's funny you mentioned the Beavis and Butthead bit, because that was, I think, a pretty big deal in Morbid Angel gaining popularity. Like, there weren't too many venues for an extreme metal band to get out to a wider audience. The Beavis and Butthead videos were like a really big deal. Also, the band was featured pretty. It was pretty rad. I included it on our Halloween mixtape, but the band was featured in the movie Night of the Demons 2. Have you guys ever seen that one?
Thanks. I've seen the remake of Night of the Demons, and I've seen the original, but I don't think I've seen the second one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No. It's actually really good. I haven't seen the remake. I like the first one all right, but Night of the Demons 2 was sick. Anyway, there's a scene that features... Morbid Angel playing the song Rapture while like this demon lady is dancing seductively at rules. So I think that was another big thing to kind of boost their star. But they never really stopped like touring. My buddy has a poster in his living room of this show that he saw in Colorado, and I believe it was 2001. The top billing is from top to bottom, if I can recall correctly, I'm pretty sure I can. It's Pantera, Slayer, Static X, Skillet, Morbid Angel.
So Morbid Angel opened for Skillet?
Yeah, which is about the craziest thing I can imagine. Like, who the hell
was
is Skillet?
Was that the Reinventing the Steel tour? I remember this.
That had to be, because that was about the same time.
Yeah.
But that's just a crazy lineup to think about. Static X getting billing over Morbid Angel.
Oh, Static X were huge though. Back in the glory days.
I guess so. I never really heard a Static X song until like I think I was an adult.
What? Come on. You weren't a scrappy little metalhead finding all the wrong stuff in all the wrong places.
No, I was definitely, but like that was kind of. I didn't really have a decent internet connection at the time, and like I was more focused on downloading Korn bootlegs and ICP songs.
Yeah. Around the time that like Static X came out, they were getting like actual radio play and were like showing up in video games. So it makes sense in that time frame when Morbid Angel really wasn't doing all that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's crazy to think about that lineup from 15 years ago. It's, you know, Pantera, you'll never see him again because, you know, R.I.P. Dime and all that. Static X, you'll never see him again because Wayne Static died. I guess theoretically you could see a Slayer Morbid Angel Skillet tour.
Sick.
I don't know. You know who Skillet is, right, Jordan? Because I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, they're just kind of like a generic sort of hard rock band, like one of those mid-2000s. They have their song featured in WWE pay-per-views type band. I think they might be a Christian rock band. I'm not quite sure.
That's weird.
You know, Christian in quotes, like not really, but enough to help them sell a couple of million records.
Maybe they had a nice conversation with Tom Mariah.
See, that's the strategy. Like, Skillet and, like, I guess POD, where you, if you could sell your record, like, at the Sam Goody and also be featured in the Family Christian Bookstore, like CD Rack, you were making money then.
Yeah, that's where it's at. Boys in August Burns Red are kind of pulling the same thing.
I guess I haven't been into a Christian bookstore in 20 years, but
I don't know if August Burns Red really gets sold there, but
well, you know what? I'm gonna do some research this weekend because the big Christian bookstore is right next to my favorite liquor store, so I'll go.
Appropriate.
Yeah, I'll go buy a bottle and then swig around some whiskey while browsing through the racks and see what's making some sales.
I remember when my high school death metal band would play, we had some weird electrical issue where if somebody like grabbed the microphone with their hand, we would pick up reception on an amplifier for the like local AM Christian music station.
Yeah, what is the deal with that? I had that experience too, except with like talk radio.
Yeah, it's usually AM stuff, like the weird stuff too. It's never like the big FM stations.
Can anyone listening to the show explain in the comments like how the radio frequencies work and why has it only happened to shitty high school bands?
Yeah, in two sentences or less.
I think there's a few dudes that are like engineers and stuff. Hopefully they'll have an answer for that.
I bet you we'll get one of those Finnish guys. They'll come in comments like we really want to know.
Hopefully not. So yeah, overall, that's Morbid Angel in a nutshell.
Well, we can't talk about that without talking about like Evil D's career and his outfits and the Jenna Torturers and all the stuff he's done and probably what made that album Elude Divinimus and Saninimus Bane and Blanimus sound the way it did.
Okay, we can do that because I've got a theory that I've discussed a lot with W. And we should do that. Like, Evil D, pretty, I don't know, he's a born showman, I would say. Compared to Steve Tucker, by comparison, is a very, like, workman-like death metal musician. Like, he does his job. He shreds the guitar in his own band, Warfather. He shreds the bass and, like, delivers tight growls for Morbid Angel, like it's nothing. But D was known for, like, spandex shirts and makeup and nipple tape. And I believe his wife is in the Jenna Torturers, right?
Yeah.
Just a very cartoonish kind of dude.
Yeah, very different than Morbid Angel, if you guys were ever to give it a spin. Yeah, a lot of PVC shirts, lots of guy liner and
cowboy hats.
Cowboy hats, teased hair, and then not just cowboy hats, but like the gator skin cowboy hats that have the skulls on them and such. The really douchebaggy ones.
Rhinestone cowboy hats.
Right.
So
bam, bam.
In the years since Evil D left Morbid Angel, he's reinvented himself as a country musician. And not like kind of a winking and nodding country musician, like maybe Hank Williams III would do, where he's still mostly a metal guy. It's just straight, like, bootcut jeans and a straw cowboy hat. David Vincent has been playing a number of shows at this little dance hall downtown here in Austin. One day I'm going to go check it out. But it's a very strange late-career revitalization. I'm not entirely sure what to think about it. But as I've discussed this with Debbie a lot, Morbid Angel has always been Trey's band, and it's gone in the direction that he's wanted to go. He is constantly experimenting and doing different things, and he's been on the record as during the time that Illid came out and the years before it, he was really into electronic music. I think that Illid was the record that he wanted to put out. It's just, I guess, the blame or the scorn goes to the guy in the PVC shirt.
Yeah, I guess I'm guilty of that. I just see David Vincent and I'm just like, you! What did you do?
So, yeah, in a way, it's very clever for Trey, you know, to experiment. And if it's successful, he gets to be known as the genius behind the boards. And if it's not, it's like, hey, look at that asshole. He's wearing pleather.
He's the scapegoat. He's the patsy.
Trey Ezikthoff, evil genius.
So why does Trey get the funny last name and Steven never had one?
I guess we should ask Mrs. Ezikthoff, as she is pretty vocal on the internet.
Right. I mean, I've seen the things she said, and she didn't have Ezikthoff for her last name. I just assumed she must have divorced Mr. Ezikthoff at some point.
Please, Mr. Ezikthoff is my father. Call me Trey. we're probably butchering the pronunciation of that. I've never known how to pronounce it, so...
As a Google goth.
As a Google goth. Is that right?
Sure, why not? Let's go with
Trey as a Google goth. I like it.
So, yeah, that's the band, and I think that we should probably get into this sweet interview with Steve. We talked about a lot of things. We talked about his predilection for living kind of isolated in the mountains of West Virginia. We talked about the fucking media, of which I guess we are a part. Fucking media. And we talked about death metal. Lots and lots of death metal. I think it's a really cool interview, and I hope everybody enjoys it.
Fresh is cross my dirty mountain. For it is within the future, fresh is cross.
Hey Steve, this is Joe from the metal blog Toilet of Hell.
Right on, dude. I thought that, man, I'm sorry. I thought it was a joke when you told me this. I was like, yeah, that's real fucking funny.
Man,
right on, man.
It was a joke when I started out and I had no idea I'd keep doing this
right.
4 years later. I am Joe Thrashenkill, and I've got a very special guest with me today from Warfather and the mighty Morbid Angel, Steve Tucker. Steve, how you doing today?
What's happening, bro? I'm doing great, man. What's happening, bro?
Just stoked to have you here with us, man. Glad that we can talk for a little bit. Your brand new record is dropping extremely soon on December 1st, and in my circle of internet metal nerds, this is like definitely the most anticipated record of the year. What kind of early reactions have you seen from the new record?
I mean, most of my early reactions so far have been like from just interviews, mostly in Europe, you know, and it's been great. I mean, actually, most people are like saying that's the album they kind of hoped for. I don't really know what that necessarily means, but I'm glad that they're stoked about it, you know. I mean, I'm stoked about it, dude. I spent over a year working on the album and, you know, excited to be working, you know, making music with Trey, man. So I was pretty stoked about it. So I'm glad that if anybody out there is excited about me still making music, that's awesome.
Hell yeah. I think that the reaction that I've seen is people were maybe a bit let down by the previous record, and this one just feels like a continuation of formulas and gateways and Heretic that people are just like, yes, all about that old school sound.
Right on. Man, that's kind of what it feels like to me. You know what I mean? It kind of feels that way. It kind of feels like we picked right up kind of where we were with Heretic, just much better, you know, production this time around, you know?
Yeah, so on this new one, you've got it produced by a dude that you've played with in the past, Eric Rutan. How did you decide that he was the guy to handle the material?
Man, it was a no-brainer. To be honest with you, it was just, you know, I worked on him with the Warfather. Trey had worked on him. Eric recorded a couple of drum tracks for the last Morbid album. That's all he did was, you know, record drums. But so, you know, they had work together, and I mean, immediately, pretty much when we start talking about this, it was almost immediately just acknowledged that, yeah, we would definitely be going to work with Eric. And it's easy, dude, with the guy. He's I mean, he knows the people involved better than just about anyone, man. Him and I are very, very good friends. Him and Trey are very good friends. Everyone's known each other for many, many years. And I mean, you know, he kind of knows how to get the best out of, you know, everyone involved as well. So he had even worked with Scotty, the new drummer, before. So he literally had worked with everyone involved. And it really, for me, it made going to the studio every day a little bit different than it had been in the past. And in the past, it always kind of felt like you're under that thumb, man, of time, watching the clock. You know what I mean? You're not really there laughing, or if you are, you're wasting your time. But Rutan, man, it's not really like that. With Rutan, he knows when to crack a joke. He knows when not to, man. And, like, he just keeps everything flowing, man, and keeps all the the creativity happening, and it's cool. It's just fun to work with someone that not only is such a good friend, but they have all the technical ability in the world. I personally think Eric's, you know, one of the definitely top producers out there, man, and probably the top producer in death metal, hands down. So to work with him, for me, on that level, awesome. All of his gear is top-notch, his studio is top-notch, and, you know, it's really close to, it's like close to where Trey lives, and, you know, so there's just a matter of convenience as well. It's, like I said, man, a no-brainer to go to Eric, you know.
Yeah, I've watched videos of Eric explaining, like, his gear and how everything works together, and it's just, that is a guy who knows his stuff.
Man, he's done, you know, at this point, dude, he's done over, you know, well over like 100 albums on labels. You know what I mean? Major, you know, released albums that have been, you know, worldwide releases and such. He knows his shit. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, when people like, you know, when Morbid are going to you, and, you know, Cannibal Corpse went back to Rutan as well. And I mean, you know, anybody that really is looking for, you know, a real sound. And what I mean is, you know, they want to really record real guitar amps and real drums and things like that. I mean, they go to Rutan. You know, it's just, that's common knowledge.
So following the alphabetical order of the Morbid Angel discography, you know, this new one is called Kingdoms Disdained. And just to me, the title sounds a little bit like a reflection on the current state of empire in the world. But what does it convey to you?
It's exactly really what it is. I mean, it's all the kingdoms disdain, though. I mean, including the kingdom of heaven and hell. You know what I mean? All of them. You know, it's just really, man, I think it's a reflection on what's going on and what's been going on, what's been developing over the past possibly 20, 30 years, probably 30 years, 40 years or so with the world. And, you know, I mean, it's got to just this point where everywhere everyone's disgusted being forced into things they don't want and being told to change when they don't necessarily want to, or having things, you know, changes forced down their throat. And I just think that it's really caused a lot of unrest and unsettling sort of vibes across the world. And it's pretty interesting to me, man. It's all, like, you know, I've always written about spirituality and things like that, and this time's no different. The only thing is that it really seems to tie into modern social issues as well. You know, the complete lack of having any sort of spirituality, and, you know, being, you know, just so materialistic. I mean, the world, it's either that or violent. You know what I mean? It's pretty crazy at this point, you know?
Would you consider yourself a spiritual person?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I would consider myself to be someone that is pretty in touch with what's inside of me, man. You know, I think I'm a pretty true, outgoing person. I mean, you know, I'm a little deeper than your average person. You know, I mean, usually with me, if we're going to have a discussion, it's probably not going to be about, you know, last night on television. You know what I mean? It's going to be about something a little bit more deep, you know.
I've read in interviews with in the past, you live a little bit more isolated lifestyle. You know, you've got land, you work the field yourself. Do you even own a television?
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely. You know, I mean, but, you know, the thing about it is most of the time, you know, it's like a, if I'm on television, it's like I'm playing Xbox or something like that.
I know what I mean?
Yeah. Or watching sports, dude. I've always had a love for sports that I just have always had. You know what I mean? And I like a lot of sports. So those are really the only things I do on the television. I'm not real interested in the news. Every time I watch the news, dude, I end up upset. And I don't mean upset like as in scared or frightened. I feel completely, totally lied to and led astray. You know what I mean? And I really, I'm not interested in that, man. I'm not interested in going there. And I mean, you know, a lot of regular television, man, it's aimed at a pretty low level of understanding. You know what I mean? So it gets boring pretty quick for me.
Yeah, I feel you. Especially with the news, it seems like there's not a single, no network anywhere that's interested in just straight telling the truth. It's all...
Man, that's terrible, isn't it? They like who they like, dude. And you know, I mean, the thing about it is, man, is, you know, what you see on the news and things like that are just extremes, man. They're just extremes that most people aren't dealing with on an everyday level. You know what I mean? Like the you know, just take, for instance, protests and things like that, man. They don't focus on the 10,568 people that aren't doing anything violent. What they do is they focus in on the two people that decided I'm going to throw a garbage can through a fucking window.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And it's what they choose to show us, dude. It's what draws attention, man. You know, like a long time ago when TV, the news, I don't believe was so much about ratings or, you know, things like that. It was really more about, you know, the news, sending people information. And I'm sure it was always, you know, more of a one-sided thing. I mean, I can remember the anti-communist propaganda when I was a kid in school and things. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, it was probably always sort of one-sided. But the thing about it was it wasn't so blatantly obvious. You know, like, it was much more just kind of laid out there. A little bit more is information with just a hint of opinion, you know. And now it's all opinion, and really, honestly, they always just pick the most sensational thing, you know, to highlight. And they do that to draw people's attention. I mean, if they can scare you and make you tune in at 11, they have done their job.
Yeah, very true, very true. I guess a little bit about this new record, the song that's out for it right now is Piles of Little Arms, and that is just such an incredibly evocative title. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Man, it's the idea of the piles of little arms would be the arms that had been chopped off by children who had been inoculated against, you know, sort of the tribe's will. You know, there's always this thing in the world, and it's getting less and less because they've just about got everybody at this point. But, you know, there's these missionaries that go out, dude, and they go in and they quote unquote make a mission somewhere that has never heard of this god or that god. And they give them all these artificial gifts, telling them you don't need to. One example, you know, telling them you don't need to walk a mile to get water. Why would you do such a silly thing? We're going to drill a hole and we're going to give you water right here, as long as you'll pray with us. You know, there's always that, as long as you'll do what we want from you. And now, as long as you'll believe in the evils that we believe in and the goods that we believe in, we will turn you into people just like us with all the same fears and all the same hatreds and anxieties. You know what I mean? And to be honest, it's that's where all the bullshit starts, man. And that's why we started the album with that song, you know?
That's a really interesting way of looking at things, too. I mean, I've always felt like missionary work like that, digging wells and stuff, it's, I guess, worth the indoctrination if you can improve somebody's life materially. But again, I never put too much faith in religion, I guess, myself.
Man, you know, do you really need to improve someone's life whose tribe has lived somewhere for 3,000 years, maybe never discovered until the past 10 years? Do you really need to change their life? I mean, those people don't have disease. Those people don't have famine. Those people don't have anarchy. Those people don't have people getting rich while they suffer. I mean, what they're doing is they're living as a tribe the way man more than likely was meant to live. And yet we have to come in, people have to come in and change them and make them be just like us. If you don't fit into that perfect little family portrait that, you know, has been thrown up on the wall and, you know, the White House, man, then, you know, you're not normal. There's something wrong with you. And that's not true, dude. That's completely a false statement. You know what I mean? It's not that way. I mean, all people don't need the same things, man. You know, and somewhere there became an opinion where everybody needed the same exact thing and they needed to be the same exact way. And anything even slightly different should be stoned to death. And that's not right, you know.
That's a really interesting way of looking at things. Yeah, you know, over the summer, y'all went on that extensive U.S. tour in which the band played solely material from the records you sang on. I got to catch your Houston date, and that was just a killer show. But I also saw a lot of grumbling from folks that they couldn't hear some of the older stuff. As an artist, how do you navigate doing what's satisfying to you as a band versus what you hear that the fans say?
Oh, man, it's tricky. You know, somewhere along the line, somebody put out there that we had said that, you know, we were only doing this era stuff from now on. And I think that did make a lot of people start to grumble. I would have grumbled too, dude. You know what I mean? Absolutely. But that's not what was said, dude. It was one tour. You know what I mean? It was one tour where it was like, you know, we started putting together, okay, what songs are we going to do live? And honestly, dude, when Trey and I started talking about them, and I started stating the obvious songs, you know, Rapture, Pain Divine, maybe Blood on My Hand, you know, just the songs that had always kind of been a part of the set. For Trey was just like, man, you know, let's do something different, dude. You know, I mean, and it was never until the end, very end, it wasn't that they ended up being all our era. That just ended up really being the songs. He asked me pick songs, Scotty pick songs, him pick songs, and in the end, the songs that were all picked, man, were they happened to be from that area. I did one interview with a guy in Orlando, and he said, so are you only going to be doing, and I said, well, it just so happens on this tour, we're only going to be doing songs from this era, and somewhere it got changed into from now on. And that's not a fact, dude. I've always respected Morbid Angel's legacy, dude. 100%, absolutely. I love, you know, the first four Morbid Angel albums with every bit of me and my metalness, you know what I mean? Like, and dude, I always liked playing those songs, man. It's always kind of fun to play, be on stage with Trey and, you know, playing a song like, you know, Where the Slime Was or something, man. It's great. You know, I mean, to be honest with you, those are great ass riffs. They're Trey's riffs, man. There's things he wrote. It's Morbid Angel. And I mean, we're never going to stop playing all of that stuff. But the thing that we are going to do is we're going to mix it up, dude. We're not going to just keep playing the same songs that you've always heard. Yeah, you're going to hear songs from Blessed and from Covenant and Altars and Domination and stuff, but it might not be the same song that you've heard every single time. You know what I mean? It might not be the song that you've heard on tour, you know, the three, four, or five other times that you've seen Morbid Angel. I mean, we're going to play songs that, you know, I mean, they maybe got put on the back burner a little bit somehow, man. You know, when you're writing songs, dude, you know, you love all the songs or you wouldn't put them on the album. And somehow some songs end up being the ones that become, you know, a little more quote unquote popular than others or considered classics, you know. So, but dude, we're going to mix it up. We're going to always mix it up and we'll be playing classic Morbid Angel songs always. It's Morbid Angel. I mean, this is not just Morbid Angel with me. I mean, this is Morbid Angel and it always was, you know.
Yeah. And, yeah, maybe like a side effect of that is I think a lot of people went back and they re-explored a couple of these records that maybe they didn't put on as often and really found like, oh, this material is actually sick. At least that's some of the reactions that I've seen. People are like, well, I've never really given Formulas a fair shake, or I've never given Heretic a fair shake, but this is, you know, this is exactly what I needed to hear.
There's some of that, dude, and like you said, you asked me, you know, in the question, as an artist, how do I do it? Man, it's really difficult, like I said, because we wrote all these songs. You know what I mean? We have all these songs. We wrote all of them. And it's like difficult to pick, especially, dude, the more you have, you know, the harder it gets, man. You know what I mean? Because it's just like everybody, a different song that's their favorite. Everybody, dude, and Morbid Angel, honestly, I meet fans, you know, I've met fans in Morbid for many, many years and talked to fans for many, many years, dude. And honestly, every single Morbid Angel fan I talk to has a, you know, this album's my favorite for this reason. And there's thousands of different reasons, man, why one thing or another make an album people's favorites. It's really interesting, man. You know, it's not like that. You know, with most of the metalheads I know, for instance, man, you ask them what's Metallica's best album, they're going to say Ride the Lightning or Master of Puppets, dude, depending on, you know, kind of when they were born. Mm-hmm. With Morbid, man, you get three Morbid Angel fans in, and you ask them, and they all three got a different answer, dude. They all five got a different answer. And they'll argue about it, dude. They'll sit and debate each other on it. You know what I mean? It's pretty interesting.
I've been involved, you know, in one of those before, and yeah, people came to shouting at each other.
It happens, dude, but you know what that says, man? I mean, it says that a lot of people relate to Morbid Angel for one reason or another. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's one of the reasons why I would never want to limit genre time frames of what period of Morbid Angel we were playing. You know, I mean, I'm not saying, dude, like, that I would never want to just go out and just do, like, say, Gateways all the way front to back. That would be awesome. It'd be cool. They did that shit with Covenant, and I asked Trey, how was it? And he said, man, it was pretty cool. You know, I mean, I got to play songs that I'd never played from the album live. And I was like, well, that's awesome, dude. You know, so, I mean, yeah, it would be cool. And like I said, man, Morbid's, it's a diverse, weird band in a lot of ways, man. Every time a new album comes out, people are always a little confused. You know, a few weeks later, man, people seem to be a little bit more tuned in to the understanding of what's going on up with it. And that comes with originality, man, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Trey has written some of the most original riffs I've ever heard in my life, I'd say.
Agreed. That's why I play with the guy. That's why I would even want to play with the guy. You know what I mean?
Definitely. You know, it seems to me that metal is having like a kind of a renaissance at the moment. That there's all kinds of new sounds coming from people all over the world. But it also seems like there's less money in it than ever before. Now, you've been doing this for a long time. How does 2017 compare to the 90s or the 2000s to you?
Well, I mean, I got in the you know 90s, I was playing in bands. I didn't get in Morbid until a little later in the 90s, you know. But you know what I see? At the time, the 90s, man, we were going into the Bill Clinton years in the United States, man. And to be honest with you, metal was no longer the most popular thing. You know, pretty much any kind of urban music seemed to be the music, and even metal, people started sort of imitating that sound. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, death metal, man, just continued to do its thing. You know, the difference now really seems to me is the younger dudes that I meet, man, and there's a lot of younger dudes in the metal now, and I think that has a lot to do with sort of this chaos I was talking about earlier in the interview. You know, all this chaos in the world, dude, people reach for some sort of serenity, man, and heavy metal, man. I'm sure that's why I got into it myself, you know what I mean? Like, and I think that there's a lot of people getting into metal now because of the fact that they're trying to, they got all this crazy shit around them, and here they can listen to this and totally just go into a different thing, and it's violent if they want. They can listen to, you know, Cannibal or whatever, and it's all just music, dude. You know, it's not really acting out violently against another person, you know? I think it's sort of needed as like a relief at, you know, times when the world's really tense. I mean, the 80s, the world was really tense, and heavy metal just became humongous, man. So that's why I think that happens now, man. The thing about it is, though, man, it's like, you know, metal now is such a diverse thing, dude. And, I mean, it's really interesting because there's parts of metal, for me, that I hear it, and I'm like, man, what is this? This is the weirdest goddamn combination of things, but... To somebody young, dude, who grew up with a little bit younger, different influences, it seems to be somewhat what they've been looking for or something. You know what I mean? And it's, I think it's just the difference in times, dude. There was some point where melody quit being the sort of the driving force in music and sort of rhythmic things became the driving force. I mean, I'll give you an example with, you know, Sepultura, dude. You know, you take Beneath the Remains, man. It has really dark, badass melodies on it. And some of the solos, dude, aren't even necessarily guitar solos. It's more like an accompaniment, a melodic moment in sort of the chaos, you know. And then the next album comes out, you know, Arise, and there's a little bit more tribal element. But, well, by the next album, you know, it's completely tribal and rhythmic. No longer is melody even a part of it, dude. They've tuned way down, and it's just now a rhythmic thing, and that really became much more a part of music. Things like Meshuggah and the whole djent movement and all this kind of stuff started to come out, and it's to me that music is not nearly as it's not melody based, man. It's just more rhythm based, and like so that's something, you know, a change that I've seen, you know. And then you brought in, like I said, dude, you know, now you've had years and years of metal, so people are taking influences from all these different places in metal. You know, and also they're influenced by rap, you know, and also they're influenced by somewhat without even meaning to be whatever pop bullshit has gone on in the background of their life for the past 20 years or whatever, you know what I mean? 15 years. So it's just, it's always, music's always evolving. And I think what becomes acceptable or what is trendy or whatever like that, you know, it's always changing because, you know, people change and, but it seems to always be on a large scale, man, like the world, like during that time that Sepultura changed, dude, the entire music world was sort of changing in a way, you know. And all these bands like Machine Head, first album sort of melodic heavy metal album, next album more of the rhythmic Machine Head, now sounds a little bit more like Fear Factory and, you know, all these other bands where it became more of a percussive thing. that's been a big change for me. That was kind of odd, but I totally get it. You know what I mean? I totally get it. What I don't get, though, is dudes that try and sing pretty over that shit. I cannot stand it, man. It will make me turn something off immediately, dude. And it's a shame because I'll hear shit and I'll be like, man, this is fucking badass. This is really cool. I'm really digging this. And then all of a sudden, some little whiny-ass guy will come singing in, you know, kind of in key, kind of, and it's just, it's terrible, man. And I can't hang. It'll make me, I hit, you know, delete or stop, whatever, and eject, and I'm done, dude. I can't help it.
I could not agree more on that. The vocals, they really make or break a band for me. But are there any...
Yeah, man, vocals and drummers, you know.
Oh, definitely. Are there any younger acts that you've heard that that you're into?
Man, you know, I mean, they're not younger, man. I love this band from Australia, Portal, dude. I think they're one of the most evil fucking horror landscapes I've ever heard, dude. They're just at all times menacing. Maybe not the most technical band in the world by any means, but at all times dark and evil, dude. I love that, man. I listen to a lot of bands, dude, and I like moments. But like I said, you know, there seems to be this trend of so many bands sounding similar. And what they call them is subgenres, dude. I'm not into the idea of subgenres. What subgenre means to me essentially is you ripped off the one band in the overall genre that you liked. Do you know what I'm saying? In other words, you only like Deicide, so now you sound like Deicide. Every fucking thing you do sounds like Deicide. You know what I mean? Or Cannibal Corpse, and it becomes subgenres that they call, you know, death slam, deathcore, you know, whatever the fuck it becomes, dude. And to me, if you're in a subgenre, what that means is you're not original at all, you know?
I'm sorry.
I know I'm an asshole, dude. I know I'm an old asshole, but, you know, I say what I mean, and I really mean that. And to me, it's, you know, you're either original, man, and you're constantly moving along, or you're kissing somebody's ass. You're following behind and doing what some other guy did. You're just trying to hide it. You know?
That's an interesting thing that you're saying, though, because I've been thinking about this a lot, where I get a lot of bands send their music to me, and it's like, well, you obviously existed because you just wanted to sound like Bolt Thrower, or you just wanted to sound like Cannibal Corpse, and there's nothing else going on there. I'm wondering, like, did you really need to do this, or could you guys just have played covers?
Man, you know, I mean, I hate to go that far, but I mean, to me, man, there's taking in influence, dude, and spitting out something original, and then there's copying. You know what I mean? And I think that we all know, dude. We all have a soul. You know, you ask me about my spiritual. I have a soul, dude. I have a soul. It knows when I've done something bad. If only I know that I did it bad, my soul knows. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's in there. And dude, when you play something and it sounds just like somebody else, you fucking know. You know it. You know what I mean? You know how many riffs I've thrown away because I was sitting around jamming, and then I start jamming, and I'm like, yeah, that's fucking sick. And then I realize, oh, man, you know, that kind of sounds a little bit like this, man. And I'll go, ah, fuck it, and throw it away. It's gone. That riff's gone. I mean, it immediately is off the table because it's not what I want to do. You know, I want to do something that, you know, has its own thing to it, man. I don't know, man. Originality for a lot of people is not important, dude. It's not relevant. It's about, oh, man, I love the way that sounds, so I want to be like that. And it's all okay, sorry about that. I dropped the phone out. My headphones fell out, man. You know, when you ask someone, you say, hey, man, you know, well, what's it like? And if they're like, oh, dude, it's kind of like this album from Amon Amarth. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I got you. You know what I mean? Immediately, I'm like, oh, okay. Now, if somebody says to me, hey, dude, oh, dude, yeah, honestly, man, I got a bunch of weird influences. I don't really know what it's like, dude. I'm much more interested immediately, dude. I am immediately more interested. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah, originality, dude, it's few and far between, man.
I wanted to ask you, knowing everything that you know now, would you go back and change anything in your time in Morbid Angel? Is there anything that stands out?
Oh, man, I mean, you know, that's the thing about, you know, sometimes you think something, you know, at the moment is a piece of shit and you wish it never happened and you wish you could change it, and then only to find out that it affected something in some remote way that later on you have to just accept that it happened. I mean, I'm not really one of those guys that really, you know, wants to go back and linger in the past anyway, dude. I mean, it's not that interesting. You know what I mean? It was all fun and it was all, you know, whatever. But, man, I'm always kind of I'm worried about now and worried about taking care of my things now and living life now because, dude, I mean, you know, plain and simply, this world's fucking crazy. I don't know how much longer it's going to be around, and I'm going to enjoy it while it's here, you know, and make as much music as I can, you know.
That's a hell of a good philosophy. Thanks so much for doing this, Steve. I had a great time talking with you.
Not a problem. Thanks. It was an interesting interview, dude. I get so many of the same questions over and over throughout the day that it's great when I get something that kind of doesn't flow that way. You know what I mean? I appreciate it, bro.
Listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.